So the standard for moral imperatives must be a personal lawgiver, someone who sets forth the standard and is personal, a being, who is unequivocally free of the potential for moral corruption. Otherwise, such a lawgiver would forfeit the sort of trust that is required for any equatable moral imperatives that he would impose on others. You know, so going back to the revolution, why did the people rebel against the king? It's because even the king was subject under the law in of itself. He was the actor who carried out the law and was able to move within certain directions to guide this understanding. But having a person that is they knew that the law being imperfect, he was violating even in his capacity as the king.
Right.
And so they viewed it as a proper form of rebellion against this type of law.
Right. A corrupted king can't be trusted. A corrupted king shouldn't be obeyed.
Right.
And so if you have a corrupt moral lawgiver, then, you know, that's an excuse for pause. Wait a minute, I shouldn't be obeying him. So what he's saying here is, though, that you need a lawgiver who is morally incorrupt,
right?
So that they can be trusted to make the, you know, to give the law that's correct and make the judgment that is moral,
right? And just think about it. If the opposite, so obviously, what we theists are going to suggest is, hey, we must turn to the Christian God for the standard. Obviously, that's where we're going.
Right.
But the rebellion is like, oh, here's God. He's, you know, he's out there. He's, you know, this perfect of all possible beings. And, you know, he judges you for little mistakes that you can make. And you could live a perfect life except for that one thing. And he could send you off. But if you were to take the opposite and say, okay, well, you know, God gives you 16 chances, and after the 16th one, well, maybe he'll come in and pop you in the nose.
Well, that's not fair. How come he doesn't give us 17?
Yeah. Right? Or what kind of God is it that demands us to follow law but gives us 16 chances?
Yeah, that's not fair. Yeah. Why does he get 16 chances? He should have been punished with one, right?
Yeah.
So unfair.
So it's not I'm able to decry the standard. It's that I don't like the standard, and so that's what we should be addressing more if we're going to take that route into having an objection against the Christian God. Mm-hmm. Only in a biblical religion is there an absolute principle that is personal. Only the personal lawgiver, the judge of the universe and the human heart, qualifies as, so he judges the universe and the human heart. I want to make that clear. He justifies as the supreme exemplar of righteousness, justice, truthfulness, and love. And he's able to make beings for the good and for destruction so that he can show this type of character to his creation.
Yeah.
He's able to do that because he's made us, he owns us, he's able to dictate how the universe exists. When you drop a pencil above the table onto the table, and he's also to tell you, love your neighbor as yourself, don't cheat on your wife, and also do good works.
Yeah, good, yeah. And so, you know, he says our collective human consciences share a revulsion for evil, such as rape and torture and pedophilia and that sort of thing. And he says we know that we must refrain from engaging in these horrific acts. And knowing that we cannot ground objective moral standards and unequivocal moral duties apart from God tells us how extremely hard that it is to escape the fact that he has... that he hates these things and has done that long before we did.
right? Yeah, we don't like that sort of thing, except when I do it, and it should be viewed as lesser because I'm not raping and torturing people. I might just be, you know, cheating on my wife, and you know what sense does God have to be concerned about that? That's between me and every other person that I'm with.
Right.
So,
yeah.
No, he does care, and he's able to care because he's the one that made things like marriage and relationships and sexual unions and the all the factors that work in all those factors as well. So here's a problem we do have. Christianity is a good problem. Oh, good. Finally, I'm glad we're done with the evil. Now we deal with the good. Well, this doesn't make the problem of evil go away. We're so close. I thought he was going to pull a rabbit from his hat here.
That's right.
But it clears the field of debris and charges of Christian hubris. Yes, Christianity has this problem squarely dropped in its own lap. We have to deal with the evil. What does it mean? How did we get here? What are we doing with it? But that is not the terrible burden that so many have said it is. Non-atheist accounts of good and evil. Non-theistic accounts of good and evil are bankrupt. And that is a far more serious problem. Christianity has a problem. We understand the evil part. We need to understand the problem part. But it is a good problem because we have nobody else has the resources to address it except for the biblical Christian God.
Right. And so non-Christians can only feign outrage over injustices, right? I don't like it. Well, that's just what you don't like. Right? So they can feign outrage over injustices without giving an account of why they ought to be outraged. Well, because I just don't like, or it's evil. What do you mean? I don't like it. Oh, well, right?
You stole my retirement money and you lived like a king. Yeah, but I had really a lot of fun. So I got to go to jail for the last 20 years of my life that were probably going to be the bad part. All right. No, you broke your word. Well, what does that have to do with anything? Yeah. Oh, sure. Okay.
Yeah. So what? right. So non-Christians can, you know, only feign outrage over injustices, right? Humans cannot explain why we suffer from injustices unless there's a way to objectively quantify that something ought to not have happened as it did, right? Can we justify sympathizing, for instance, with starving children if we have no way of saying that the real evil, right, it's really evil and that's what's befalling, right? Mm-hmm. Can we justify sympathizing with them? He tells us that biblical Christianity has a way to answer these questions that no other religion or ideology can match. And so, yes, there's a problem of evil. We have the problem, but he's suggesting we have answers. The non-theist, the atheist, has the evil part, right? And explaining that, and they don't have the answers, right? So that's the conundrum that he puts them in this particular situation, right? Where does evil, what is evil, what does it come from, why does it exist, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.